Welcome to Hip Hop Knowledge Shit, where guerrilla journalism meets culture, politics, and infotainment through audiovisual blogging.
So today's guest, I discovered this brother's work. Ooh, this had to be 2013, 2014 on Facebook, but I was always in Fayetteville jail, so I never got a chance to interact with him, but connected with the brother on Instagram recently. Powerful brother, does a lot of work media in the media realm, with decoding different messages in the media and propaganda, breaking down different forms of religious school of thoughts, providing a cultural context to the dynamic of to the cultural dynamic of impacting us from African center lens. The brother is named after one of the great warrior ancestors, Dr. Khaled Muhammad, with two L's. Dr. Khaled, that's how you spell his name. I want to welcome the brother Khaled Desaline. How you doing, my brother?
Peace, brother. Peace, brother. Bibi Fahodiye, African liberation.
Bibi Fahodiye, my brother. So thank you for coming on to the platform. I appreciate it. You told me this would be your last interview, so I'm very appreciative of you allowing me and giving me the opportunity for you to educate the masses. I appreciate you, my brother. So thank you.
No doubt. No doubt.
So, who is Khaled Desaline? Like, what's your origins? Like, what type of work you do? Like who are you? So, for people who aren't familiar with who you are.
All right. Well, as for my name, you know, I draw from the ancestors. I pull from the ancestors. So, you know, as you already noted in the introduction, my first name come from as a respect to Dr. Khaled Muhammad. But it also come from, if you know the spell it, K-A-L-Y-D, because it come from our great warrior ancestor from Africa, Kalidosos of Mercuria. And that brother was a warrior who fought against the Islamicization of Africa. And, you know, you spell it K-A-L-Y-D-O-S-O-S. So Kalidosos, I shortened it to Khaled, also in honor of Khaled Muhammad. And obviously, everybody know about the war general from Haiti, Desalines. You know, so I like to pattern myself after warrior ancestors. You feel what I'm saying? So that's where the name come from. And as for me, you know, I'm just in America. You feel what I'm saying? That come from all the hood street stuff that everybody, you know, a lot of other brothers come from. You know, I did time, you know, behind them walls, and which helped understand the situation that we really in. It helped me get a real, true appreciation for what some of our other warriors in the past have had to go through when facing this beast face to face. And that's what I feel like being locked up behind them walls do for an African. It actually gives you a more in your face, impersonal, in person perspective about this beast that we up against.
Indeed, indeed. So speak on some of your influences, like that made you and molded you, like mentally and like just like from where you came from. Like you talked about the streets. So talk about like how that influences like growing up made you into who you are. But talk about like the current, like what things you doing in regard to like advocating and working with the brothers and sisters that run the blocks and that's behind prison walls.
Right, right. So, you know, one of my greatest influences behind the walls was some of them brothers that have been down for a long time. You know, them hardcore warriors. You feel what I'm saying? One of them, them guerrillas. One of them, I ain't gonna say his name, but anyways, that brother put me up. It's like, it's funny because when I was studying behind the walls, I really was more studying trying to find out who I was as an African. You feel what I'm saying? African history and that type of stuff. But it was an older Damu brother, a blood brother, that brother put me up on like more of a, but I was looking at it more from a religious perspective to keep it a thousand with you. Like I was still into the Bible, but I was looking at it like as a black Bible. Like, you know, we, these people is black, you know, the Hebrews is black, and I'm a, you know, like looking at it from that perspective, you feel me? Because some of the information that I had had prior was like, Dr. Creswell saying where she, her argument was that Jesus was a black man and all of that. So that was the information that I had in my head, but it was a brother actually, but that brother put me up on Chancellor Williams. You know, this was back in like 2009. He put me up on Chancellor Williams, man, and that was like, that's really what really opened my brain up in a more African perspective. You feel what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. To give me a more war, because I was a warrior ancestor right there. So it was brothers like that behind them walls. It was other brothers that was more politically educated in terms of black empowerment and fighting back against them beasts. You know, them type of brothers behind the walls. Obviously, when you're coming from the streets, you always get that raw element of black people who know something ain't right about life. You feel what I'm saying? They know, they just can't put their finger on it, which is why they out there in the streets just wilding and trying to make the best of what they got. You feel what I'm saying? And living by their own rules, you know? And that's one thing about street life that I respect, is that these people, to a great extent, they live by the rules that they make, as opposed to living by the rules that they being told to live by. You feel what I'm saying? Which is why they law practice. You feel me? And you know, so I respect people like that, because they're more free than the rest of society who, you know, who they... You got people that'll be at 2 in the morning and it's a stop sign. Ain't nobody on the road. They going to stop at the stop sign because they still programmed. You feel what I'm saying? Ain't nobody else on the road. It's 2 in the morning, but they still going to stop at the stop sign because they're programmed. You feel what I'm saying? Whereas people with the street mentality, they more like, shit, I ain't got to stop. Ain't no cars coming. What am I going to stop for? So anyways, my whole point is I have a respect for that street mentality because they live by their own rules. And so, you know, when you come like that, and then you get into the revolutionary, the more African-centered perspective, you bring that with you. So I was influenced by Brothers Behind the Walls with the political education. We could talk about, you know, some of the those influences like George Jackson and whatnot. Obviously, I wasn't around when he was around, but just the information is still there behind the walls. And then, you know, once I got out, I learned of other warrior ancestors. Go ahead.
Yeah, but speak on, like, your experience being behind walls, because George Jackson talked about it, like, in his Blood in My Eye and Solidarity, brother. So speak on, like, the terrorism, like, the prison system, the system of mass incarceration, like, how that plays a factor into the consciousness, because there's a lot of brothers in there that come in there, and that's the place that they learn, but George Jackson... Man, it's so much I can say about Conrad George. It's crazy. And then his brother, Jonathan Jackson, man, whoo. We need Jonathan Jacksons of the world, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely, man. You know, the thing is, you know, prison does one of several things to people. A lot of times people go to prison and they get worse. Some people go to prison and they get better. Some people go to prison and they become even more coons, and then you got those others that go to prison and they become more warrior like and they have a greater perspective on the world. And I was one of the latter, you feel me? The ones that go there and gain a better understanding of what's going on and what side that we need to be on. You feel what I'm saying? And like the way that shit worked behind them walls, man, is like these motherfuckers got complete control over your every existence, your very existence. You feel me? They can control when you eat, if you can eat. And that was one of the things, I was always like that, because I've been to YA before I went to prison, and I was always one of those people that would basically assess the situation and try to get others to realize that you a war captive right now. You being held against your will right now. You feel me? So we shouldn't have no compassion for the people that are holding us captive. You feel me? We should have more aggression towards them than we have towards each other, because we not, and I'm just talking about prisoners in general. You feel what I'm saying? But it's hard to get them to see that, because the way they structure these prisons is let me tell you, I'm gonna give you a story. When I was in California prison, they wanted to take the TVs away from from the prisoners, okay? And what they said was, you know, they don't deserve to have no damn television in their cells. You feel me? If they got televisions, then they not thinking about the time they need to be doing. You feel me? They not really paying the price of being locked up. You basically making life too easy on them. So there was politicians trying to and regular citizens in America trying to petition to get the televisions taken out of the prisons because they felt like, you know, you basically rewarding these motherfuckers by letting them have televisions in their cells. And you know who it was that stood up against it the most, against taking these TVs from them?
Kamala Harris.
It was the prison guards, bro.
Oh,
the prison guards stood up the most. They wanted them to have these TVs. And to show you how deep this shit go. And because what they said was, they told them people, they said, look, all you politicians, y'all don't work in these motherfucking prisons. Y'all don't have to risk your life. Y'all ain't in this mud. So you take these TVs from these people. And now, see, who they going to focus on now? Who they going to focus their energy on now? Now they're going to start paying attention that they are in prison and who's imprisoning them. And then now they're going to start focusing on attacking guards or whatever. And that's the thing, man. Like, when you're behind the walls, the reality of it is television is a major distraction from the reality of you being in prison. You feel me? Now you get to focus on watching Housewives or this and, you know, Big Brother and all these other little television shows that they continue, you know, that you run and watch. You're more focused on that. Or you focus on gambling on the yard and this dude owe me this, or playing basketball and all of that, as opposed to focusing on the fact that you're in prison and it's another man telling you, you can't go here, you can't go there, you can't do this, you can't do that, go to your bed, here's your food. You feel what I'm saying? Like, you're not focused on the fact that you're a captain because you're so caught up in all of the other distractions. And the guards recognize that if you take these TVs from these people, this boob tube, this idiot box, that you're going to create monsters up in this mug who want to fight for their freedom. And so they fought to keep the TVs in the prisons so that the prisoners won't turn their focus on the guards. You feel what I'm saying?
Damn, that's crazy. So I've heard you speak on Dale Jones, Steve Coakley, Dr. Amos Wilson, like Kwame Ture. Speak on how those guys influenced you, like, when did you discover Dale Jones? Because I just got put on to him recently. And I feel like I missed a whole bunch, man.
Right. Yeah, exactly, man. Dale Jones, you know, I missed him too because I didn't know about him when he was still around either. I learned about him afterwards. But it was a brother named Brother Ram. He put me up on him around 2014 on Dale Jones, man. And ever since then, man, you know, I bought his books. He got books out.
Yeah, his books, they like $200-something, like a lot of money. Like, they're hard to find. And then I discovered him off the American Nigga Factory. Ooh.
Right.
Like, blew my mind.
Yeah.
I was like, why? Nobody ever told me about Dale. You know what I'm saying?
See, we got a few elders and ancestors who were uncompromising, man. And Dale was one of them. He's one of the only ancestors that I know that was strictly black. Like, you got a lot of ancestors who was like, who made a lot of concessions and a lot of room for other races, or even John Henry Clark. You know, he's made statements to the effect of, you know, Cleopatra was a black woman, and if she wasn't a black woman, we should count her as a black woman because of her politics. Like, you know, Dale Jones wasn't on nothing like that at all. Like, he was more, I mean, much respect to John Henry Clark, but I'm just saying, like, these are where these gray areas that some of these ancestors had. Dale Jones had them gray areas. You feel me? He didn't make no room.
I had a brother on my show on the podcast, Ali McBride, and he was saying how Amos used to go at Dr. Clark and like the other African warrior scholars that were like, they're now ancestors, but he would go at them for them, like, not holding the line and staying the course.
I know for a fact Amos would go at some of the people, his contemporaries at that time. He even had a little beef with Coakley, which, you know, I got a lot of love and respect for both Coakley and Amos. But to me, he would go at some of these ones who do all these lectures, right, and been doing lectures for 20, 30 years and trips to Kemet for 20, 30 years and taking – hundreds of people every trip and charging $5,000 a piece, making $500,000 every time you go. You feel what I'm saying? Like, and not one institution being built for African people out of all that money that you're making on trips to Kemet. You get what I'm saying? Like, and all these lectures, you know, you got to pay them. You, in order for me to speak to my people, you got to pay me $7,000 or else I ain't going to come speak. Them type of people. You know, you had Amos Wilson going in on people like that. And Dale Jones went in on people like that as well. You feel what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I know. Yeah. Yep.
It's crazy that you say that. So it's slander on me. So I used to I'm trained in academia. So got a bachelor's of African American studies. I have a master's in education. I was railroaded out of academia because the Boulay tried to recruit me. I used the information against them when I was lecturing. But a lot of guys on social media, like I can name them, Brother Hassan, Kwesi the EY, who else? Pro Wack Thought, Rasty Draws, like all these cats that plagiarized my work. Like they saying like stuff like Hidden Color Syndrome, Cultural Confusion, like. People know me around the conscious community, like even Sarnetta and all of them. But like, besides the point, like I stopped lecturing. I never charged for a lecture. Anytime, never charged for a lecture. If you bought me out, hey, just pay for my fight, my flight, my travel. But like, I'm coming down hard on them with debunking pseudo consciousness because there's a lot of that going on. Like, you charging the people arm and a leg, but you ain't build shit, like you said. So that's vital, like. At least be building some sort of institution instead of like,
yeah, man,
you know, traveling, speaking, living a good life. Like, you conscious clout chasing.
It's very vital, bro, to build institutions. Amos Wilson, as brilliant as that brother was, he was dedicated to African people as well as his books sold. Do you know that man did not take a single dime home from the books that he was selling? For African people, that shit did not go to his pockets. All them books he got, Blueprint for Black Power, you know, the psychological development of the African child, awakening the natural genius of Black children. These the proceeds to those books, when he would go to lectures, the books being sold at the lectures and the lectures would go to the institution that brought him out. Like, oh, you bringing me out to speak to the people? Okay, cool. Here's these books. You know what I mean? Y'all sell them, and that way you keep your institution going. The books for Blueprint for Black Power, for instance, the sales from those books were going to institutions that were helping African people. He wasn't pocketing a dime from that. That goes to show his dedication to African people. You feel what I'm saying? Like, okay, he did have businesses. But he offered a service. You get what I'm saying? You were actually getting something from him. He had a print business, a print and copy business. Yeah. You know, you need to go right. You need to go get prints and copies made. You feel what I'm saying? Here, you know that's a service though. You feel me? It's like somebody that might fix your car or change your tire. You feel me? That's a service. You feel me? That I'm offering you. You feel me? But in terms of the information for African people, he channeled that right back into African people. Mm. You get what I'm saying? And so I think that we can learn from ancestors like that. Like, that's my perspective. Like, when it comes to the information that's vital to saving our race, as a lot of people like to use that term, this is information that's vital to saving our race, but you want to charge $19.95 for it. You feel what I'm saying? It's like, bruh, so basically if I ain't got the bread, I can't get the information that's vital to saving our race. Like, what? Like, so it's like to me, it's insane. You know, we look back at these warrior ancestors that we did have, like Queen Nanny of Jamaica or Dessalines and who, you know, Nat Turner. These people was not charging the people for the information that was going to free them. Mm-hmm. Nat Turner didn't meet up with people and say, hey, let's go meet. We're going to talk about how we're going to get free. And then when people got there, he was like, well, look, man, you got to give me 50 cents. You got to give me $20. You feel what I'm saying? That didn't happen. You feel what I'm saying? Right. Like, he didn't charge the people for vital information to help them get free. You feel me? So my thing is, make yourself valuable in other ways. You feel me? Learn how to change a damn tire. You feel what I'm saying? And make money like that. You feel me? But when it comes to, you understand what I'm saying? Yeah. So, you know, like, that's my perspective on that. But yeah, man, Amos Wilson, Dale Jones, those is one of the only ancestors that I know of that was uncompromising on people of color. That's another thing too, because you know you got a lot of people talk about this people of color.
No, sorry, call
and, you know, we all
diversity, all that.
Yeah, even I love Dr. Wilson, but she was big on that people of color thing when you look at her book. You feel what I'm saying? Isis Papers, you feel me? Mm-hmm. And you know, but you got ancestors like Amos Wilson and Dell Jones, they was willing to tell you, these Asians is not your friend, they're your enemies. These Hispanics are not your friends, they're your enemies. These Indians, you know, you got a lot of black folks who love these Native Americans. They not your friends. You understand what I'm saying? Even Dell Jones said that straight out. You feel me? Like, you know, shoot, like that, we don't owe them nothing. You feel me? You know, but ass kicking. But anyways, you know, so like, but yeah, those ancestors, I love those ancestors. Steve Coakley, you feel me? Warrior ancestors. So people out there who are hearing these names, they need to look into that, and they need to research what these brothers brought to the table. Mariba Ani, that's a sister. We need to look into what she brought to the table as well. You feel mm-hmm. me?
Absolutely, man. That's powerful. So, Pan-Africanism, what is the current state of Pan-Africanism? Do we need to redefine it? Do we need to throw it away? Do we need to recycle it and start over? What are your thoughts on that?
I do think that Africans across the world need to collaborate and cooperate with each other. Pan-Africanism should be the goal. You feel what I'm saying? The problem, though, that I'm seeing is that it does seem like there are other groups are not that interested in Pan-Africanism. You feel what I'm saying? It seems like it's black people in America who are right up under the beast are the ones who are most interested in cooperating across nation borders with other Africans. You feel me? And worried about the welfare of other Africans across the world. But it does not seem like there are other, and I think that's the role that Pan-Africans who say they do advocate for Pan-Africanism in these other countries, their role should be to get their people on board with that. Mm-hmm. But the soul of black folks in America has always been an open heart and an open door to other Africans across the world. So I think Pan-Africanism should be the goal. And I think, but I also think that there needs to be a lot more effort of joining forces when it comes to and a cooperation or whatever, mm-hmm. when it comes to other Africans in the diaspora cooperating with black people in America, you know?
Right, for sure, for sure. So I seen you breaking down religion on Saint African TV. Talk about, let's go through them though. What are your thoughts on Islam?
When it come to, well, on a straight basic level, for black people, we should have a black religion. Now, my thing is, what I mean by a black religion, it should have been something that came from a black brain, a black mind, a black spiritual perspective, a black connection to the universe. We should not have a religion that comes from any other race of people. You feel me? If you all into this chakra shit, if you can't find it in Africa, then, hey, that shit out the door. You feel what I'm saying? If you all into any other type of weirdness, I don't know what you might be into, but if it didn't come from a black soul and a black spirit, it's foreign. You get mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And so, but I also think too, I have a double perspective on that. So when it comes to spirituality, our spirituality, because we're a different people and because we do move through the universe differently, we connect with the universe on a different level. Mm-hmm. You feel me? We vibrate on a different level. Because of that, our spiritual perspective should come from from a black person. It shouldn't be an idea that came from somebody else. However, I also think that there are some people who are more militant, and they have less emphasis on the spiritual side and the godly side or whatever, however you might want to define that. And for those people, I think it's okay for them as well to create something of their own. You feel me? Whatever it is that keeps you on code with African people, with black mm-hmm. people, then that's fine. as long as you remain on code with black people. So if your religion does not pull you off code, which most of them do, which are, you know, besides the ones that come from black people. So like, well, let's go to Islam. Like you said, we start with Islam. You know, if you're a black person, why are you praying towards a non-black land? You're praying towards Arabia. You're learning a non-black language. You're learning Arabic. You're dressing in a non-black way. You're wearing Arabic clothes. You feel me? You're speaking the Arabic language. You're praying in an Arabic posture. You feel me? So to keep it all the way black, that's off code. If you're trying to keep it black, your religion got you off code. It has.
What you think about the Nation of Islam? Wouldn't that be from like a black perspective of Islam?
It depends. If you want to rewind all the way back to Malcolm X's day, that was a different Nation of Islam than what we have today. The Nation of Islam today believe in the Quran. The Nation of Islam in Malcolm X's day just believed in the lost found Muslim lessons. You get what I'm saying? That was written by a black person, Elijah Muhammad. You feel me? That taught that the black man is God. These people in Arabia don't teach the black man is God. The Mecca Hajj, and you got to go do your pilgrimage over there. You run over there talking about the black man is God, they're going to chop your head off. You feel me? What? Straight up. They serious over there. So the Nation of Islam today, who believe in the Quran, which does not say the black man is God, is a different Nation of Islam than the people who did say it in the past. Mm-hmm. You feel me? The Nation of Islam today is also into Dianetics and L. Ron Hubbard, some white man, has a spiritual hold on their brain. Mm-hmm. You feel me? That's a different. L. Ron Hubbard was not their spiritual leader in the days of Malcolm X. You get what I'm saying? It was just Elijah Muhammad and all of that. And we have our issue with them too, but I'm just saying it was a black idea to a degree when it comes to the religious aspect. Politically, I disagree with them, but religiously, I understood that it was a black idea and it gave them black pride in that aspect. You feel what I'm saying? So to me, the Nation of Islam of today is far more off code than they were in history, even though, again, I wasn't in total agreement with the Nation of Islam from history either. I'm just saying it was more on code back then than what it is today. So if we're talking about the Nation of Islam in our lifetime, these people believe in a non-black book. They also pray towards Arabia. Mm-hmm. You feel what I'm saying? They do. You feel me? I'm talking about the ones who are still in the mosque. I don't know about anybody that's still pushing what Malcolm X believed in, you know, white man, the devil, and all of that. They don't even believe that. They left, you know?
The Nation.
Yeah. So then when we talk about the Nation of Islam, we have to talk about the people that stayed. And the ones that stayed, what they into today is not on code with black people.
Absolutely.
You know?
Christianity. What's your viewpoint and lens on Christianity?
Man, I when it comes to Christianity, there's a whole long list of things. But ultimately, you know, they all believe in that Bible, and that Bible teaches you to turn the other cheek. You feel what I'm saying? And you're if you're a Christian, then your primary role model is Christ, Jesus Christ. And if Jesus Christ is your role model, then you have to live the way he lived. And if you live the way he lived, then you're probably going to die the way he died, because he admonished them to turn the other cheek. He did turn the other cheek. That man walked peacefully to his death. He did not fight for his freedom. And if every black man was to decide to live like Jesus, we wouldn't fight for our freedom either. And also, Jesus also believed in the institution of slavery. So if you're a black person, with our history with slavery, we should be anti-slavery all day. But Jesus was not anti-slavery. If Jesus was around today and slavery was around today, he would be okay with it, because he was okay with it when he was here last time. He actually gave examples on why he believed slavery was okay. When Jesus spoke, that man said, the slave that didn't do his master's will be punished, and the slave that did do his master's will be rewarded. You feel me? He gave an example to his disciples. And so my whole thing is that is a clear indicator of his belief in the institution of slavery. Not only that, he also went even further to say how a person should be treated if they didn't do the master's will. He would be beaten with many stripes. So what that tells you too is that not only did Jesus believe in the institution of slavery, but he also upheld the rigor with which it should be upheld. This man talked about basically how aggressive you should be with your slave. You feel me? Beat him with many stripes. So that's your God or your spiritual leader as a black person. With the history that we have in slavery, you should not have a spiritual leader that believes you. You're more. If you ask a black person, do they believe slavery is okay? They're gonna tell you no. But their spiritual leader is telling you yes. That tells me that your morality today is higher than the morality of your God and his son. You got a better morality because at least you can say slavery is wrong, but your God and his son couldn't say it was wrong. So that means you got a higher morality than the God that you follow. You got a higher morality than the God's son that you follow. So why the hell is you following them if you got a better morality than them? You feel what I'm saying? Because at least you can recognize that something's wrong. These motherfuckers couldn't even recognize it. So as bad as a person as I've ever been, at least I know slavery ain't okay. And because I know that, my morality is better than your God's morality.
Yeah. For sure. What about more science? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, Morris Science Temple actually has its roots in these secret orders and secret societies. You know, and if we know anything about these secret orders and secret societies, these they pretty much are under the rulership of white power. Mm. You know. They're the Go Boys and the Do Boys for white power. You know, that's just is what it is, you know? Like, these motherfuckers can't say that they had this science and they kept it all the way through slavery and no, you know, they didn't do that. That's not what happened. They actually went and got their ideas from some white person. Mm-hmm. You feel what I'm saying? And so, yeah, I don't trust nobody that belongs to none of these Greek letter fraternities or none of these Masonic orders, which with the Moors are based on Masonic science, but the major issue I have with the Moors as well is that they put all of this emphasis on learning legalese, and you gotta learn the Black Laws Dictionary, and you gotta, you know, if you ain't saying it right, brother, see, if you said it right and you had the right name and you stopped calling yourself black, this white man get off your back. Like, bruh, like, that logic is so freaking flawed, it don't make no sense, bruh. Like, the Native Americans didn't call themselves black. They was Tonto and whatever the hell they was, TP and whatever. That's what they was. And them motherfuckers still got their asses fucking handed to them, right? The Arabs over there in Arabia, Osama bin Laden and them, they ain't calling themselves black, and they still getting drone attacks right now. Mm-hmm. You feel me? Drone strikes right now. You feel me? No matter who you talk about, who caught hell from this white man, these motherfuckers did not call themselves black, and they Shaka Zulu or whoever, they wasn't calling themselves black, but the people that existed after Shaka Zulu, you know, they still caught hell in South Africa. You feel what I'm saying? So this whole idea of just the reason why we catching hell from this white man is because you call yourself black, and black mean death, and you dead in the eyes of the law. Let me tell you something about this white man. That's the thing. I'm going to tell you something about this white man. The white man does not respect any law. Not the law he wrote, not the law you wrote, not natural law, not nature's law. Nature tells you you shouldn't have sex with a little boy. They don't give a fuck about nature's law. They're still going to do it. If they wrote the book on law and it says thou shalt not do this, they're still going to do it because this white man is not governed by laws. So if you can show this white man in a book, look, man, you said you was going to uphold this treaty. You said you, if I'm white, you going to be okay with me. He going to look at you and do what the fuck he want to do because he got the power to do it. You get what I'm saying? That's really the determining factor here is power. It's not about what's written in the law book and what you can show this white man. Because when you tell me that, what you're telling me is that you still believe that the white man will keep his word if you can just show him where he made the promise. You get what I'm saying? And that, like, I've already graduated beyond that idea that this white man gonna keep his word. He not. I know he a beast. I know he's a liar. You feel me? I know that. The Moors don't know that yet. They still believe if you can show in court the judge where the law say this, that he has to follow it. That motherfucker don't have to do shit. You feel what I'm saying? He gonna only have to do something if you put something in his face and make him do it. That's it. Like, this whole idea that you can just show this white man where he made you a promise in the treaty and he gonna follow it. you're ignoring the nature of the beast. You feel me?
Yeah, speak on the Hebrew Israelites.
Yeah, again, man, which you know, they just basically black Christians, man. The black Hebrew Israelites. Look, let me tell you something. I'm going to give you an example on why black people are not the true Hebrews. Well, at least I know I ain't. You feel what I'm saying? We talk about homosexuality, right? Check this out. Ain't no history of homosexuality in Africa. I come from a people who do not have a history of homosexuality. The Hebrews, out their own mouth, in their own Bible, had a whole tribe of fags, homie. They had a whole tribe of homosexuals. It was the tribe of Benjamin. They all were gay. They were butt bandits. The whole tribe. This is in the Bible, bro. This is not me making this up. This ain't me trying to clown. This is their history of homosexuality, Greek-Roman behavior. You feel me? We don't have that history in Africa. So I'm an African because I don't get down with the gay shit. You feel me? But y'all Hebrew Israelites, your whole tribe of Benjamin was gay. It's in the book. Somebody need to go research it. If you're Hebrew and you ain't never read that, then you over here believing in something you ain't did the research on. But it's a whole chapter's dedicated to it, man. The whole tribe of Benjamin was gay. They was butt-fucking each other. But they were really good at slingshot warfare. They used slingshots, right? And so what happened was, the way the Bible story tells it, just to make a long story short, this man was traveling. Him and his wife stopped at this village, okay? He happened to be in the tribe of Benjamin's territory. He sat in the town square. In those days, if you're in the town square, somebody has to come out to you and say, hey, you know, I see you're a traveler. Let me take you into my home. Let me give you some water and some food, and you can stay here until you're ready to go. That was like a polite thing to do in those days. So he sat in the town square. Nobody came up to him and invited him to their home. But this other man came up to him and said, look, hey, I don't think you know where you at, bro. Like, you might want to get up out of here. Matter of fact, here, you can come to my house because you don't really know where you at. Takes dude into his house. As soon as he goes into the house, all these men start running up on old boy house, banging on the door. Hey, bring that man out. Hey, bring the new booty out. You feel what I'm saying? Bring him out so we can do what we want to him. Basically, they want to, you know, do the gay shit to him. And the man in the house is like, no, this is not right. You know, this is a traveler. Let this man be. You feel me? He ain't with y'all with. You feel me? Here's my daughter. Take my daughter. We don't want the girl. We don't want the woman. We want the man. Bring the man out. This is what they doing. The whole tribe banging on the old boy's door. His door is about to come off the hinges. So he's the man who was traveling had his wife with him. He like, fuck it. They open the door, toss the wife out, slam the door, but like, closed. Them dudes raped this woman all night. They raped her all night until the next day. Okay, and left her right there on the porch. You feel me? He opened the door in the next morning. He looked down. She slumped on the ground. He nudged her and said, hey, get up. It's time to go. She ain't moved. She dead. They fucked her to death. Okay? So what ended up happening was, yes, all the men, you don't know who know what they was doing because they was fags. So they was doing all kind of crazy shit. Cool part about it is they said this is a horrible thing to happen in Israel. They start chopping her body up into 12 pieces so that they, as evidence. So she must have been bruised everywhere. Because they wanted to send proof to each tribe. So they chopped her body into 12 pieces as evidence of what happened to this woman, okay? And so then all the tribes of Israel got together and said, this is a horrible thing. These Benjamites is on some bullshit. They were some nut-ass shit. We got to do something about this. So, but they didn't want to fight them because the Benjamites is good with slingshot warfare. They can hit you from a distance. They don't have to get up close and personal with you. But they ended up having to fight them anyway. And they wiped out almost all the tribe of Benjamin, bro. According to the Bible, they wiped out almost the whole tribe. There was only a few men left. Okay, and those men was like, well, what are we going to do now? Like, we ain't got no people. So how are we going to have a tribe? You feel me? And, you know, we need women, you know? And I don't think anybody in Israel wanted to give them fags any women. So they was like, well, y'all can go kidnap some girls from the next by village. You know, the Canaanite girls, you know, they go out during this time of season to pick berries or whatever they got to do to harvest their food. When they go out to harvest their food, y'all hide in the bushes and jump out and grab whoever you can and whoever you can get. Those, take them as your wife, take them home as your wife, which is what they did. So this Bible is talking about how gay that these people, Hebrew Israelites, were. It's condoning kidnap and rape of young maiden women. These are probably young 12-year-old virgins, and taking them as their wives against their will. You feel me? Just a whole clusterfuck of fuckery. You feel me? And this is how they got down in the Bible times. This is in the book. They can't take it out. It's too late. You feel me? Now it's out there now. You feel me? So I don't fuck with them because they on some weird shit. That's their history. That's not my history. I'm an African. We didn't get down like that. So I don't fuck with no Hebrew Israelite shit. You feel what I'm saying? I didn't know if you had a lot of cussing on your show, but like I get a little animated about it because yeah, man, because it be pissing me off because they got a lot of our people believing that junk, man. You feel what I'm saying? Like none of that, like the behavior of the Hebrews is so Jew. It's so Jewish. Like it's patently Jewish. Like they really were some slick, sly, conniving motherfuckers. The Bible will tell you that. You feel me? Like the Bible tells you that Abraham was pimping his wife out. The Bible tells you that. Just go back and read the story. See, we read these stories from a like these people were so holy perspective. So you don't really catch it when you're reading what you're reading. You don't really see it like that. But if you just go back and read it like a regular story, you're going to see what the business was. You feel me? Abraham is the father of the Hebrews. This dude went into Egypt, okay? He was in the Middle East. He was in Canaan or whatever, the land that was promised to him. First, he was in Ur or Babylonia. He was over there, and there was a famine, so he had to get up out of there. He left with his family and some animals and some slaves. And then he went into Canaan or whatever where his God told him to go. And when he got there, a famine happened again. You know, these Arabs always running from that desert, always running from that fucking dusty ass, broke ass famines. They go into Africa to get saved. You feel me? And that's exactly what Abraham did. There was a famine in his land. They ain't had nothing to eat. So he goes into Egypt to fucking get saved. He goes over there and he tells them that his wife was really his sister. So they like, okay, you know, and mind you, we don't know if this is true. We just taking them by their own story. Doesn't mean it really happened, but it tells you their mentality. You get what I'm saying? That's all that matters. It's not about, you know, whether freaking Hansel and Gretel really happened, but it does tell you that these people was eating their own children in Europe. You get what I'm saying? Like, that's what Hansel and Gretel was about. Some kids got lost in the forest and the old white lady found them and ate their ass or tried to eat them. You get what I'm saying? So it don't matter if it's true. It just speaks to your mentality because these are the stories you tell. You feel me? It's just like, you know, you got somebody that's whatever, any other type of storyteller. That's just Dean Koontz and Stephen King. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter if there was a mass murderer in this hotel. It just tells you what's in his fucking brain. You get what I'm saying? Like, this is your mentality because you wrote this shit. You feel me? So back to fucking Abraham, right? This motherfucker, he goes to Egypt, tells these people his wife was his sister. So they like, okay, cool, you know, I can holler at her, right? They invite her into the Pharaoh's house. Boom. Next thing you know, the Hebrew God plagues the Pharaoh. So he sends her out of there like, yo, and he goes to Abraham and says, man, why you tell me this was your sister, man? If you'd have told me it was your wife, I wouldn't have touched her, okay? Now, first of all, what you got to understand is, what that tells you is the morality of the Pharaoh was, or the people in Pharaoh's house was so high, the princes of the Pharaohs and all of that was so high that they were saying, if I knew that was your wife, I wouldn't have even tried to holler at her. But you told me it was your sister. So even nowadays, you fast forward to 2020, 2021, and somebody could know that the girl is married and they still try to holler at her. You get what I'm saying? But way back then, these people was telling you that the Egyptians were so high of morality that they wouldn't holler at another man's wife. So, but see, the Hebrews are trying to make the Egyptians look bad and make themselves look good, but the truth always still slips through. You feel what I'm saying? Because when they tell you that Pharaoh said that, that shows you that Pharaoh had a higher morality because he wouldn't have hollered at her if he known that was his wife. Right. You feel me? But they over here trying to tell us, right. So he said, if I'd have known that was your sister, I wouldn't have touched her. He said, get up out of here, take her with you, and here's some extra gold, and here's some camels. So Abraham got paid. He got cashed out for that manipulation scheme that he ran. He got cashed out. He sent her in there, boom. Like, you know, whatever happened, and next thing.
That sounds like a Ponzi scheme, like a scam, like how most people running scams now online and shit. Right.
Okay, so now we talk about Jewish mentality, right? We talk about how slick and Ponzi and Jewish bankers and how they get down, Jewish lawyers and all that shit. They call them sharks. You feel me? So you mean to tell me that Africans are the real Jews, or the people who still act like that are the real Jews? You get what I'm saying? I'm glad that you caught that. That was a scheme that he ran. But just the cold part about it, right after that happened, what'd he do? He left Egypt and went and to Canaan or somewhere else and ran the same scheme on another guy, Abimelech, okay? Told him it was his sister. Abimelech takes her in the house, oh, finds out really his wife. Abimelech said, man, why'd you do this shit? You know what I mean? Here, get up out of here. Here's some more gold. Here's some more camels. And you and your wife, get the fuck up out of here. So he came up again. He ran that scheme on them again and came up again. That's a Jew move. You get what I'm saying? So this is how we know who. So you telling me, oh, no, that's really us. That ain't us, homie. We don't get down like that. You feel me? So, but the people who get down like that today, they was getting down like that back then. So that's how I know who's really who because of how these people behave. And it's all in the story. You feel what I'm saying? You can't take it out the book. It's right here. You feel me? So yeah, Abraham was the first pimp because he was pimping his wife out. You feel me? All of this, man. So yeah, I don't fuck with that Hebrew Israelite shit because the reality of it is they got low self-esteem. They hate being African. You feel me? During slavery, we was told that we wasn't shit, but we was taught that Bible. And so these black people who started believing in the Bible, they wanted to find themselves in that book. They wanted to identify with it really, really bad. And so they started thinking, oh, it's a black thing, and this is really a black thing, and this is who we are. And that's where the Hebrew Israelite faith came from. Mm-hmm. You hear what I'm saying? Them just wanting to identify with the only stories that they knew. You feel me? Like they didn't know nothing about, you know, our great warrior ancestors of the past because it was stripped out of them during slavery. That's all they knew was Abraham was a great man and a man of faith. That motherfucker didn't have no faith. If he had faith, right? Look, I know the Bible well because I grew up believing in it. This, they say Abraham is known for his faith. Like you can Google that and you type in Abraham and faith, a man of faith, and that's the story that they push about Abraham. But he didn't have no faith, because if he had faith, he wouldn't have to lie to the Pharaoh and tell him that, oh, you know, they might kill me if they know that's my wife. They're gonna kill me and take her, so I'm gonna tell them it's my sister. Bruh, if you had the almighty God backing you up, why the hell you feel like you need to lie to the Pharaoh about anything? You feel me? You got God behind you. You feel me? He gonna back you up no matter where you go. You ain't gotta pull no schemes to try to survive. You feel me? You can just tell the truth and your God gonna come behind you with 1,000 angels or some shit, right? But no, that motherfucker didn't have no damn faith because he was scared to death for the Pharaoh. He had more fear of the Pharaoh than he did for his God's ability. You get what I'm saying? So that motherfucker didn't have no faith. That's why he lied. You feel me? You know, so they talk about him being a man of faith. He had no fucking faith. You know what they based that on? His willingness to cut his son's neck open. That's what they based that on. That man was willing to sacrifice his child. So look, you got these same people who want to criticize Africa and say, oh, they sacrifice animals and they religious rituals and shit. Well, hold up. Wasn't Abraham about to sacrifice his son for your God? You feel me? Y'all were sacrificing your babies. You feel me? The fuck is you talking about? You know, didn't your God sacrifice his son, Jesus Christ, sacrificing his fucking baby? You feel me? So y'all get mad because we cut a chicken open? You feel me? In Africa? Y'all over here doing your own babies in your own book, but nobody think about it like that. You get what I'm saying? So y'all don't fuck with that Hebrew Israelite
for
shit.
For sure, for sure. Hey, let's get to the media, man. I know you've been doing your thing on YouTube for a while, so for those who aren't familiar with your work in media, like what type of videos and content did you put out?
Well, you know, my goal is to try to get African people to think critically. You know, that was one of Amos Wilson's strongest characteristics about himself was his ability to think critically, you know, and that's really important, critical thinking. So like I like to, like, whenever like movies come out or any type of things that happen in the media, I like to give black people a black perspective of it, of what's really going on or what it really might mean. Like, so there was a movie called Little, with the black girl who, the black woman who went into a child's body, and now she's in school flirting with a grown ass white man teacher, and she's acting like a grown up, but she's in a child's body, and all of this shit. It's a film called Little. Okay, so I broke that down, like, you know, that's pedophilia. You feel me? It's psychological pedophilia, because once you accept the idea that little kids have grown tendencies in their brain, you feel me, and they can flirt with the teacher and maneuver as a grown-up, you feel me, you've already accepted a child having adult desires. You feel what I'm saying? And that's the same thing that pedophiles argue. They argue that that child came on to me. I didn't come on to her. She came on to me. You know, she wanted me. You feel me? That's what they argue. And so these movies are Europeans trying to get us to accept these ideas in a slick way, you know, and they'll tell you, oh, you know,
but she was the one who executively produced the film. That's her. So it was her idea. Again, still promoting pedophilia because they're trying to get you to believe that this 14-year-old black girl came up with this movie idea, which is a lie. And the reason we know it's a lie is because that movie's been made 5 times before already.
Right.
This ain't the first time. They made that movie with Tom Hanks before. You feel me? Where he was a child in a grown man's body. They made that movie 16 again or something like that, where this white girl was a child in her grown up body and she was having sleepovers and she had stole her best friend's husband and all of this shit. But she's a kid in a grown up's body. They made that movie where Zac Efron, I think, or one of them white actors, goes back to high school. So he's a grown man in a kid's body. So now he's over here checking out these young girls in high school, but he's a grown up. You feel me? So these movies have been made several times over again. So miss me with the lie that this young black girl came up with the idea, like, out of thin air. No, like, they just wanted to push that on the black community. So I always, like, I do my best to give African people the real of what they're trying to shove down our throats. You feel what I'm saying? So I broke down Little.
Speak on that. The video, it was like pushing homosexuality with like the Mark got shot, but it was like a video, like in the video store, because they was trying to get the shit on camera, whatever was on video. So speak on that.
Right. Yeah, man. So, you know, there's the scene where there's hella scenes in that movie that was gay as fuck. You had the scene where Martin supposedly took some ecstasy. So he's over there, you know, peeling his shirt back, pulling his nipples out and rubbing his nipples and licking his lips and shit. You got another scene where they in that TV, like a Sears type of television store, and they over there speaking gay innuendo. You know, he's like, I'm sorry about what I did to you last night. And Martin's like, yeah, when you popped me in my ass, it really hurt. And, you know, I can't get my hard no more. And freaking Will Smith is like, well, you not being able to get hard, you know, that's a real serious problem for me. So they're having this whole gay innuendo chat. And he's like, you know, I get rough when, you know, sometimes I get rough, you know, things get out of hand and this and that. So, you know, you have this little whole gay innuendo. There's other ones. You know, there was the one in Bad Boys where the daughter was going to a prom or something with the boy, and the boy comes to the front door to meet her, and Martin and Will Smith meet him, and Will Smith hit him with the, you ever had sex with a man? Dude's like, no. He's like, you want to? He's like, no. He's like, yeah, well, you better bring her back on time. So, like, all this little gay shit, you feel me? And it's supposed to be funny, and they want you to laugh, because that, absolutely. And they want you to laugh at it, because laughter is like, it's a penetrating act, bro. When you laugh at something, you automatically accepted it. You feel me? Like, you don't think about it like that. Exactly, bro. You let your guard down, your psychological guard down. And so they try to make things into jokes to get you to laugh at it. Because before they had you practicing it, they'll have you laughing at it first. You feel me? And so that's how that worked. You feel me? But yeah, man. So that's when it comes to media, you know what I mean? That's what I try to do for our people. You feel me?
Have you seen Judas and the Black Messiah?
Yeah, man, I watched that.
What's your thoughts on the film? Like, was it portrayed the right way? What are your thoughts?
Well, the issue I took with it, honestly, is that it was too much William O'Neill and not enough Fred Hampton. You feel what I'm saying? Like, you got a lot of, you know, looking at it from William O'Neill's perspective, and you know, he's having dreams and visions in the movie, you know, where things is happening to him because he's really a rat. And, you know, like, it felt like they was trying to humanize this dude when he was really betraying the whole movement. You feel what I'm saying? And it felt like they was trying to get you to be like, well, you know, I kind of see why he did it and where he coming from. You feel what I'm saying? So there's that aspect of it that didn't sit right with me, because it's like, this dude was a traitor. You feel what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Straight up. You know, I do think too, though, that it does get lost on people that William O'Neill, at the time that he did betray Fred Hampton, that he was actually like 17 years old, you know, or something like that. He was really young. He wasn't like this dude in the movie. I think he's like 30. Or something like that. And maybe dude was like 17 or 20 or somewhere. He was like really young, though. He wasn't like like a, you know, 30-year-old mm-hmm. man, you feel me? And I think that that also has plays a role in how we view history, because a lot of black people, just to keep it honest with you, it's fucked up. But we get our history mm-hmm. from movies. You know, this was the danger with that Harriet Tubman movie, is that people are going to watch the Harriet Tubman movie, but they're not going to read the history. So they're going to really think that there were black men chasing down black women, trying to catch yeah. them and put them back yeah. into slavery, you know, with that Bigger Thomas dude or whatever. So I think that's the same flaw that we have when it comes to the Fred Hampton movie, where it's not even a Fred Hampton movie. It's really more leaning towards, you know, William O'Neill. You know what, yeah. what I'm saying? And on top of that, too, though, this dude's betrayal goes so deep that wasn't the only thing that he did. I mean, obviously, I guess since the movie was about Fred Hampton, but I'm like, if they're going to spend so much time on William O'Neill, let's tell some of the other stuff he did, because, you know, it leaves you with the idea that was the only thing this dude did against the black community, but it wasn't. After that, he went on to do more operations mm-hmm. for the FBI. He actually went on to get some other Panthers caught up in some shit, like a drive-by or something. They did like a drive-by, but he was the shooter, okay? And the Panthers that was in the car with him went mm-hmm. to jail. And he got to go free because, obviously, you know, he was working for the feds the whole time anyway. But it's like, that wasn't the only crime, basically, that he was committing against African people. So, you know, I think that if they was going, you know, lean so much on trying to tell his story, then tell the whole story, then tell more all the shit that my people did. You feel me? So, you know, I think it was you know, this is the real problem, though. The real problem with Judas and the Black Messiah is the same problem with the Nat Turner movie. Same problem with Malcolm X movie by Spike Lee that we all watched from the 90s, is that they prop up, and this is not to take away from the ultimate price that these ancestors paid. It's just to talk about how white supremacy plays its mm-hmm. mind games. They want to put the people who got taken out, killed, captured, tortured, they want to put those people in movies. They don't want to tell you the stories of the people who actually fought white supremacy mm-hmm. and lived. You get what I'm saying? So that's like it's a psychological mind game that white supremacy plays, where they keep giving you these movies about, yeah, he was dope, he was a revolutionary, but we got his ass. Mm-hmm. So it communicates to your mind that you can't win when you face this beast. You can't win. You can't live to tell the story. So they'll never make a movie about Robert F. Williams. Mm-hmm. You feel what I'm saying? Or, you know, like people like him, you know, who fought and stood toe to toe with this cracker and popped people, you know, whites, police, all of that got hit up in his lifetime when he was getting active, and he's still here. I mean, not today, you know. He lived to be an old man. You feel me? He lived to be an old man. He lived like out Kwame his life. Too. You feel me? As opposed to dying. Right, exactly. As opposed to dying young in your bed. You feel me? Or dying young. Shot in front of your followers on stage. So that's the thing. Or Martin Luther King, he gets the holiday because they yeah. killed him. You feel me? It's not, you know, the revolutionaries who actually live to tell the story, they don't get yeah. on holiday. So I think that's another problem, you know. Is
very
that,
true. Speaking on the portrayal, yeah. what were your thoughts on the portrayal of Chairman Fred in the Jewish Bible?
You know what? I mean, I don't think the actor looked like him. That's one, but I don't know if that matters to some people, you know, but to me, he doesn't look like him. And I did have a problem with his accent because I felt like I couldn't understand some of the stuff that Fred Hampton was saying. You feel me? And when you do watch Fred Hampton speeches, because you can go see some of them on YouTube, or when he's speaking, he speaks clearly enough for you to hear him mm-hmm. and understand him, you know? So, I mean, the acting was a little off, you feel me? You know, I'm just keeping it a buck with you. It was a different era, okay? And they was doing the best that they knew mm-hmm. at that time, you know? Because I don't totally agree with the politics mm-hmm. of the Black Panther Party. I don't totally agree with the politics yeah. of Fred Hampton, yeah. you feel me? Like, I wouldn't have been in that white church. But I do know that Fred Hampton did have right. white allies. You feel what I'm saying? He did, in real life. But... right, because it's not something yeah. that I agree with as a, you know, as a warrior. You feel what I'm saying? Like I learned that lesson already. Like I'm not dealing with these people on that level at all. You feel what I'm saying? You know, so. But I can't knock that it's in the movie because that's really who he was. You feel what I'm saying? Working with the best information that he felt he had at that time. You feel me? I personally wouldn't have went that route. You know, I feel like I'd have been more on a Marcus Garvey tip. I'd have been more on, you know, old school Malcolm X, you know, Old Testament Malcolm X, not New Testament Malcolm X, but Old Testament Malcolm X. You know, I'd have been more like that. Like, I agree with that idea. You know, what you on now, I don't really agree with. You feel me? So, anyways, my whole point is that I ain't going to knock that it's in the movie because, you know, that does speak more towards his political perspective.
Yeah,
it's just not my
perspective. I would say my favorite part of it was, like, the interaction with the Crowns and Chapman Fred and the Panthers. That interaction, and then with the young brother that end up getting killed, both of them, how they was laying out them pigs, like.
Right, yeah, I like that.
You know,
and
that
that's really
was my
important.
Favorite part, like, of the film overall.
And that's really important too, because that's also why they saw him as such a threat. Because his ability to join up with those type of aggressive forces in the Black community, you know, because it's different if you can put together a bunch of church groups, you know, that's a whole different thing than getting gang members to join up and have a political perspective, you know. So that was part of why that he was such a great threat as well, his ability to get these gangsters, you know.
Politicizing a political street tribe, like, is an important factor to revolution. Like, my brother, Saint African, always say this, like, the Africans were European names that run the streets, and Huey P. News said it too. Like, the brothers and sisters that run the block are going to be the ones that's going to spark the revolution. We're not going to have no that's right. Spewing showbiz liberation rhetoric with a dashiki on, you know what I'm saying? The ones, want, man, they behind prison walls. I want the Black folks, you know, right. The Jonathan Jacksons of the world, you know, the George Jacksons of the world.
Absolutely. Speaking of George Jackson, I do want to say, you know, one of the greatest lessons I personally learned from studying George Jackson was the idea that one of the ideas that he put into my brain was, you know, he stopped considering himself a criminal. And the reason he's behind bars, he's convicted of a crime, but he stopped considering himself a criminal. And the reason he stopped doing that is because he felt like basically this white man is the greatest criminal on the planet. So how do I give him the right to define me as a criminal? How do you let another criminal tell you you're a criminal? You get what I'm saying? A worse criminal. So he stopped considering himself a criminal because he no longer recognized the legitimacy of white law. You feel me? He felt like these people who do have law and order and legal, quote unquote, legal authority over me do not have any authority over me because your law is not legit because you're a criminal yourself. So that was one of the most powerful lessons that I learned from George Jackson, because it's a different state of mind now. You know, you're in a whole different state of mind, bro. When you say, yeah, that's what the law says, but who are you? Because that's your law that you wrote to benefit you. Like, that ain't got nothing to do with me because you're a criminal yourself. I view you as a criminal. You're the criminal. You know, yeah, you might have me captive, but you're the criminal. So I'm not going to consider myself a criminal anymore because your law is not legit no more in my brain. You feel what I'm saying? And that was one of that can be taken on so many levels. You feel me? That was one of my best takeaways.
So speak on American Skin, because the new Nate Parker movie, because he's a director, but I was disappointed heavily by Birth of a Nation. One of my younger comrades, one of my young gorillas, was telling me, if you disappointed in Birth of a Nation,
based off the name being off the D.W. Griffin film, why couldn't you find another name, for one? Then a black man went to buy the script to put it out, like, through his studio, but you went to fight certain, like, with, you know, the Caucasoid Rupert Murdoch. So speak on American Skin. And that's interesting, the title of the
film. Right. That's a very interesting title. He did say it in the film, you know, because of my American skin. But look, the thing is with, you know, a lot of times when it comes to the art form, you got to look at the artist too. You feel me? This motherfucker, he married to a white, you know what I'm saying? A white female. You feel me? So not a white one. I don't like calling them women. You know what I mean? But females, you understand what I'm saying? Like, you know, dogs is females. You know, you got male dogs and female dogs. They're not men dogs and women dogs. But anyways, though, yeah, he married to a white female. And so he can't, when you look at Birth of a Nation and you look at the women in that movie, they're all sympathetic towards the slave and they're all, you know, they're not as evil as the white man. It's because he, in his personal life, does not see white women as just as bad as the white man. So he couldn't depict them as evil in the movie. You know, he made them nice and caring and sympathetic. And that wasn't the reality of slavery. At least 12 Years a Slave was more accurate, because in 12 Years a Slave, that white lady was pushing her husband to fucking beat it from him. You get what I'm saying? And scratching the women on their face and hitting them with furniture and shit. You feel what I'm saying? Like, that was a more accurate depiction of the white woman. But this dude, Nate Parker, because he got one in his bed at home, he couldn't find it within himself to depict them in an accurate portrait in Birth of a Nation. Now, getting over into American Skin, man, that movie was horrible, bro. That movie was super garbage. But I will say this. It was a psychological, another psychological mind game they were playing with this damn movie. That's what it was, bro. Because what he did was, he gave Europeans the opportunity to rationalize white domination, white racism, white supremacy. You feel what I'm saying? Because he spent, what, like 20 minutes of that movie in a back and forth dialogue when it was the supposed court proceeding where the white folks got to say, well, you know, what about black on black crime? And the black man had to defend black people from those arguments. You get what I'm saying?
Before you go really forward, what's the thing behind him doing what he did?
I don't know
how it ended. I haven't even seen it, but for people who what was the thing, but the plot behind the film, just so people could get an understanding if they haven't seen it.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, basically, it was a black man who was driving down the road. His son was in the car with him. Police pulled him over. Okay. His son pulls out the phone because he's a young teenager who feel like, I got rights. You know, I get to record. I can record. Police tell him, put that away. He's acting like he's reaching for a gun, but it was really his phone. So the police already pulled out his gun. So the cop, he's yelling to tell his son to put the phone away, the cop ends up shooting his son and pops his son and kills him. Okay. And then, so then there's some young high school kids who wanted to document interviews with him, and so they start following him around with a camera. He allowed them because his mind was, I'm gonna let you document me kidnap these police and hold them accountable. Okay, so he kidnaps the cops, the police chief, and goes into the police station, and he gets everybody to put their guns down because he got the police chief at gunpoint. Okay, and basically he zip ties everybody and basically decides to create a courtroom setting where there's a trial. He gets to rehold the trial because the cop was acquitted, basically, for killing his son. So now he gets to have his own trial, okay? And in this trial, he uses some of the inmates that were in the holding tank of that jail, of that police station, and he also brought out some of the, you know, people that work at the office of the police station, and then he has the police basically on trial. You feel me? And the concept is, if you're guilty here, I get to execute you, right? So the members of the jury again are the inmates that are locked up, you know, in the police station, and some of the other people that work in the building. So a janitor and some other shit. So basically, he gives everybody an opportunity to speak instead of like in regular court where, you know, only the lawyers really speak and whoever's testifying on the stand. But he's like, everybody in this courtroom could get their opinion. So long story short, you feel me? Police gets to tell his story. He tells his side of the story, and then everybody's giving their opinion, and then it goes into this whole, well, what about black on black crime and all of this, the same argument that we have on Facebook, which is why I think that's what they did. They probably monitor those conversations that black people have on Facebook when we're debating people about, you know, white supremacy, white domination, you feel me? And they basically took some of our argument points and then took some of their argument points and meshed it together in this dialogue, a courtroom setting dialogue. And basically, you know, he just gave them an opportunity to voice their side and then his attempts to try to justify the black side. And then ultimately they went and voted, and they voted that the cop was guilty. He walks over to the cop, puts the gun to the cop's head and says, he basically cowered out and decided not to kill the cop, even though that cop took this man's son. This the cold part about it, though. When you look at this movie, right, this motherfucker's ex-military in the movie. He's supposed to be an ex-military who served his country and fought in Afghanistan or Iraq or some shit. And he comes home and his son gets gunned down by a cop. Now, mind you, who does this remind you of? It reminds you of the NFAC, you know, all the motherfuckers that was talking about, we all ex-military, we all expert snipers, okay? And you come home and your people's getting gunned down. So what you gonna do? You feel what I'm saying? So if you look at this movie, this dude, you know, him and his other war buddies, his black buddies from war, went with him to this police station to do this kidnapping act, right? So mind you, dude's guilty. He puts the gun to his head and don't got the heart to take his life. Mind you, this is the same cop that actually took his son from him, killed his son. And you can't do nothing to him. You was in Afghanistan killing all kind of Afghanis. You was killing all kind of Arabs over there for this white man. But when it's time to come home and get busy over your own flesh and blood, you ain't got the heart to do it. You feel what I'm saying? And that's basically what ended up happening. And they come out with their hand, they surrender. And they go to walk out at the end. They go to walk out with their hands up. And the police still smack his ass. Guilty. Popped him in the head. You feel me? Which also tells the same narrative that if you stand up to us, you know, this is how you end. You get what I'm saying? That same narrative we talked about earlier. But also, so it was a whole clusterfuck of fuckery, because you had that aspect. You had the aspect of letting white folks air out they viewpoints and opinions about black folks. And then you had the aspect of which to me is very, very realistic. You have all these ex-military people who know how to fight, know how to shoot, know how to kill, but lose all of that as soon as they step on American soil and their own family members and people and community is getting gunned down, and they no longer know how to fight, know how to shoot, know how to kill anymore. Now they have to march with bullhorns and yell and say, hey, we ain't taking this no more and all of that. You feel me? They somehow forgot, you know, when they was overseas and you got engaged by an enemy, you automatically re-engage them and dominate the situation and take them out. You get home and now it's, where's my bullhorn, man? Order me one on Amazon so I can go yell. You know, it's like, I don't get it. Like, it don't compute to me. Mm-hmm. You got all the training, you know? Come on now. So, man, like, yeah. So I do appreciate that, because that was a very accurate depiction of reality. You feel me?
Have you seen Coin and Soil?
I did not see it. And the only reason I was gonna see it, because somebody was like, man, go check it out. And the other person was like, nah, don't watch that shit. It was bullshit. But when they told me that they had a transgender up in there pretending to be a woman, and a lot of people didn't know it was really a man, and I'm like, I can't subject my subconscious to that shit. I'm sorry. I just can't do it.
When I first seen it, I wasn't even paying. I was so deep in Trent psychologically, like, that I didn't even pay attention. Right. Then when somebody was like, "Yo, you know that was a trans man," I was like, "Nah, get the fuck out of here." When I went and looked, I'm like, "Damn!" Like, my only critique of the film was, dude wasn't no he didn't have no common sense. Or he didn't have no wit or street smarts. Like, he was doing stupid shit. So he was bound to get caught. They both was naive. Like, they wasn't, like, super conscious of, like, on what we on. They was just, she was a lawyer, and then she was like, yo, we gotta go. You know what I'm saying? And then he was being stupid. He was the reason why they got caught. The same person that played Chairman Fred. Ironically. Wow. And the funny thing about it is, I'm sure it's entertainment, but he used to play, he played like an FBI agent. Yeah.
Oh, did he?
Was it the movie is called Scario? But his partner was a white female. So yeah.
You know, all of this stuff is by design, bro. It's by design.
Yeah.
It's by design, bro. They ain't letting we not really telling our own story still. But the reality of it is, we ain't really got the budget to do it right. You feel me? Like, because I really don't want to see no bootleg looking ass shit neither. You feel me? Like, if we're going to do it, we got to do it right. And when you look at these films be having multi-million dollar budgets. You get what I'm saying? And so when you got that kind of budget, you can make things look very realistic. Explosions look realistic. You know, the soundtrack be dope because you could pay for really dope talent. You feel what I'm saying? Like, everything, the cameras, the angles, the lighting, they have access to city blocks, so you can film on this city block for a whole, you know, 6 days or a week without without having to worry about, you know, people running you off the block, because it's like, I live here, I can't, you know, like, they have whole studios where it looks just like downtown LA, but it's not downtown LA, it's some studio in the middle of the desert, but it looks like downtown LA. And so people with small budget films, they can't really pull it off. And so I'm saying that we do need to have our own media and propaganda. You feel me? Because that's really what it is. Because that's all white supremacy is giving us, is propaganda. We need to have our own. But I don't want it to be so low budget to where it doesn't have the effect that it's supposed to have. You get what I'm saying? Because these people with their films is having the effect that they want it to have. It's pussyfying the Negro. You get what I'm saying? That's pretty much what it's doing. You feel me? So for ours to have the desired effect, bro, you know, we got to step our game up. But, you know, I understand all that takes funding.
Sure. So let's get off into the hip hop conversation, because I'm a hip. I love hip hop. So speak on. I want to add the street perspective, but I call it lyrical genocide. So gangster rap to prison pipeline. But speak on, like, culture vultures and media play a factor in this too. The films, people like DJ Vlad and No Jumper. What's your perspective on, like, rappers going to these platforms? And Breakfast Club is like a white platform, but why not go to Breakfast Club? Why not go to these other ones that at least got the black face? And I don't like promoting it like that, but I'd rather them go talk to Charlamagne as opposed to talk to Vlad. I'd rather them go talk to Joe Budden. You know, I'd rather them go Three Chance and talk to Nori, even though they all under still they distribution is under a white company, or go to what's the, not Drink Champs, the other hip hop podcast with Elliot Wilson and B-Dot. Radar. Like those platforms. Like, so, like, in regard to, like, culture vultures, like, and rappers going and feet, like, eating out the hand of Vlad, but also, like, incriminating themselves. Like, is it their fault? Should the rapper be to blame? Should it be the system? Is it the system's fault, or is it like a mixture of like all of the above?
Nah, that's a really good question, man. And you know, I like Hip Hop Uncensored. I watch a lot of Spider Loke. His podcast. There's several other black media outlets, you know, outside of, you know, the Vlads and all of that. They don't have to go over there. You feel what I'm saying? They're going over there because Vlad has a large, you know, has built himself a large platform. So they thinking, you know, I'm on now. But I've heard that Vlad don't even be paying these dudes to come on. A lot of times he don't. A lot of times that there must be some Skype shit from way far away, and then the artist over there is recording himself and Vlad's recording himself, and then they put the two audios together, you know. But the thing is, man, you know, when it comes to these people who keep going to this dude after seeing so many people get caught up after coming on this dude, and the way he asks questions and get people caught up, it's kind of like, you know, you dumb enough, you still trusting this man. You feel what I'm saying? You kind of got to take that L on the chin. You understand what I'm saying? But really, especially, and this is the thing, you know, I'm not a Farrakhan fan at all. I don't fuck with Farrakhan. You feel me? Farrakhan kisses white men in the mouth. You feel me? I got it on video, audio. If anybody want to see it, anybody want to hear it, it's there. It's real. So, you know, I don't fuck with Farrakhan. However, when the whole Farrakhan versus Vlad thing came out, I was happy to see that black people were willing to get on code in defense of what they saw as a strong black man. I don't see him as a strong black man, but because other people see it as a strong black man, we're going to stand behind this strong black man and X Vlad out the equation. I actually saw some light at the end of that tunnel. I was happy to see that, bro. You feel me? I wish it was over somebody more solid than Farrakhan, but at least black people were willing to come together, galvanize, and say, we boycotting Vlad. And maybe that'll save some of these rappers. But I want to deal with hip-hop on a different level. I want to deal with it more in terms of them propping up certain artists so that they can use them as mouthpieces. You know, to tell black folks to calm down and don't burn nothing and don't do nothing, because that's really what it is. They look at our entertainers as leadership. They create them into leadership. They make us look at them as leadership. You got an interview with Malcolm X where he said, you know, name a white entertainer who's being shown to white people seriously as their leadership. It doesn't exist. But they always bring us Dick Gregory and Lena Horne. He named them by names. These are clowns. These are puppets. You feel what I'm saying? That the white man props up because they're going to say what they know the white man wants them to say. So that's been going on since the 1960s, that they put these artists out here, these hip-hop artists, they build them up. They give them a form of stature in front of black people so that they can now use them against black people by making them promote certain perspectives that white people approve of, because they're going to say what they know the white man wants them to say. So I'll give you some examples. You have people forget, but, you know, when all the Michael Brown stuff was going on and Black Lives Matter was pushing the issue, which I'm not a Black Lives Matter fan, but they was pushing the issue. I'll give them that. It was pushing the issue. You had people like Kevin Gates. You know, he went and did an interview and he says, I don't say Black Lives Matter. I say all lives matter because, you know, I face police brutality. Oh, not police brutality. I don't mean to say that. I face the police whipped my ass, but I deserve to get my ass whipped because I was belligerent. That's what this motherfucker was saying. You feel what I'm saying? But that's why they put these people into these celebrity positions so that they can come out and say what white folk want them to say. You feel what I'm saying? Lil Wayne, they asked him about racism. Why are you asking Lil Wayne about racism? He's a fucking entertainer.
I think about Colin Kaepernick. When he took the knee,
taking
the knee and being on your knees is like a sign of weakness. Like, it's a sign of, like, surrender.
Yeah.
But we so naive and we so suffering from cultural insanity, we don't know no better. We just was like, oh, the fro, oh my God, he taking the knee, he's standing up for justice, bro. You still playing football. Then you say, oh, they blackballed me, but you're begging to get back in. But then people forget the Nike act, oh my God, Kaepernick is so much of a revolutionary. They had that shit in the bag playing the whole fucking
part
time.
Of the game, like, man. This is why you have, again, with these celebrity artists who are propped up as our leaders, when they start talking about reparations and all of that, with Revolt TV, they got rappers and entertainers talking about black politics and black political agendas. It's like, bruh, you're not qualified. You shouldn't be speaking. You feel what I'm saying? Where's the real black leadership? You want to start talking about economics? Go get Clyde Anderson. Why do you have T.I. talking?
What you think about the Ice Cube
again
thing?
It's a celebrity. You feel what I'm saying? But the thing with Cube, you know what I mean? The thing with Cube is, well, which part are you talking about? You talking about his contract with Black America?
Yeah, that recent.
My whole thing is this. The way I see it is, I do want black people to get it however they can get it. You feel what I'm saying? So, yeah, I do. I feel like we shouldn't take any weapons off the table, right? So, if I feel like we should be getting it out of these white folks by scamming them and scheming them and taking money from them in that way, I'm with that. And if there's other ways of getting it out of them too, you feel what I'm saying? If we gotta take life to get it, I'm with that. If you can get somebody to sign over $500 million to black people or a black community or whatever, I'm with that. If you can get it out of the welfare system, I'm with that. Like I'm not against taking anything from them. They owe us much more, is what I'm saying. You know, my argument is that they owe us way more than that. You know what I'm saying? Like, and not just in money, but in life. You feel me? And so, you know, it's like mm-hmm. So when it comes to things like that, it's hard for me to totally criticize the idea. You feel what I'm saying? Because I feel like no matter what way, if you know, like just like with this recent stimulus checks they were sending out, it was black people getting bands out of this motherfucker. I salute them. I pat them on the back. You know what I mean? You figured out a way to get 20,000 out of this government, defraud their ass. Hey, great. I'm glad. You feel me? I'm glad somebody got something out of their motherfucking ass. You feel me? And I hope they never get it back. You get what I'm saying? Like, that's how I see it. You know what I mean? But and if there's other ways to get it, right? Like more legal ways, like which is some people go down to the welfare office and they apply. They might be lying on their application, but they still get money, legal money out of these motherfuckers. If you can get it out of them, get it out of them. That's my perspective when it comes to that. So like, I'm not going to like really completely shit on, you know, the idea of, especially because you are occupied. I look at it like this. I look at it like we live in prison, right? You know, yes, we're in this society, but we're still under the domination and control of Europeans and white supremacy. So it's like if you're in prison, right? Mm-hmm. You got people that might tell you, man, you know, we sending around this petition so that, you know, they could give us our weights back. You know, they took the weights out of the prisons. You know, we can't lift weights no more. Fuck it. If you need my signature on here, I ain't tripping. Fuck it. I'll do it. That's not my way. You know, I'm trying to get free. You feel what I'm saying? Like that. But if people want me to sign something, fuck it. I'll sign it. If, you know, it's no sweat. I don't lose anything by putting my signature down on a petition to get more visiting days or whatever the fuck. You feel what I'm saying? So I don't completely knock people, you know, for that. You feel me? I just know that the situation is more dire and there are more drastic measures that need to be taken.
Right, indeed. All right, speak on the black female relationship. I heard you speaking on interracial relationships previously. So what are your thoughts on dating and interracial relationships? Can somebody be pro-black and date outside the race?
No, that's a contradiction. It's a contradiction in times, you know? It's like saying, can you be pro-tree and be, you know, without being anti-forest fire, you know? Like, that's the reality of it, you know what I mean? Like, you can't also say, I like forest fires, but I'm also pro-tree. Like, no, like, that don't make no damn sense, you know? And so, you know, when it comes to black people being pro-black, to be pro-black is to want to procreate black, you know, to advance black, to move it forward, to move blackness forward. And if you want to do that, then you will be doing that with a black person. You feel what I'm saying? So, no, you cannot be pro-black and date outside of your race. I don't care if they're white, Asian, Latino, none of that. You feel what I'm saying? They're not black. If they're not black, by identifying as black, by identifying as African, by showing it in their blood and in their family heritage, you get what I'm saying? If you're, then you're not black. And you know, black people need to be with black people. You know, the most.
So I got a question. What about the ones that like a biracial mix? And they be like, oh, I got a black woman, but she had black. Or I got a brother, he had black.
I would never date or procreate with a half black person. You know, someone who has like a white mom or and a black dad or a Mexican dad and a black mom or whatever the hell. You feel what I'm saying? Like, because this is my thing. I look at it like this. You know, one, my blackness is sacred. I want to guard my blackness. And by guarding my blackness, I want to keep it black. You're really watering yourself down when you do that, honestly, keeping it 1,000 with you. When you get with somebody who's half black, now you just put that in your children. You hear what I'm saying? And then second of all, which also should bother people, because if you have someone who has a non-black parent, that means they have non-black parents, non-black grandparents, non-black uncles and aunts, non-black cousins. What happens There is no way I want my son sitting on some white man's knee talking about this is my grandbaby and, you know, here's a, because that's basically her dad is white or whatever, right? So, you know, she goes over there to visit her side of the family and freaking your son is going over there sitting on some white man's knee. You feel what I'm saying? Like, as perverted as these motherfuckers is, you know what I mean? Like, you got to really think about the full aspect of that. You literally have non-black people in your family now. Like, they're part of your family. You damn near can't keep your kids away from them because she got her rights as a parent. You feel what I'm saying? Unless y'all done went to court and you got full rights. But it's like, why go through that when you could just keep it black and you don't have to worry about nothing? You feel what I'm saying? So, like, you know, for me, That's my aspect. You feel me? Black men need to be with black women. You feel me? And build with black women. And we do. You feel what I'm saying? But yeah, man, like that's the greatest gift that we were given were black women. You feel what I'm saying? And it's like, bro, there ain't nothing like a black woman. Right. And straight up, like I can't even, like, I don't understand it, bro, to be honest with you. I can't put my brain into the mind of people who don't want to be with black women. That it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Indeed. What are your thoughts on feminism as far as like it within a relationship? Can it work if you're with a black woman that claims that's part of feminism?
One of the issues with feminism is that it's like a woman pro woman thing, which automatically deracializes your politic, right? Because you're putting your womanhood first, not your race first. You're putting your womanness first. Your gender is coming first before your race. You feel me? And that, to me, that's a problem. That's problematic. Mm-hmm. You know, your race should come first. You feel me? Black men, women, and children. Not, oh, I'm a woman first. Mm-hmm. You feel what I'm saying? Like, that don't make no sense to me. That's what what's that fag name? Roland Martin said when that white supremacist asked him, was he a black man? And he was scared to tell that white man that he was a black man. He told him, I'm a man. I am a man. I'm a Christian. He named everything else before he said he was a black man. You feel what I'm saying? That's the thing. Like, that's my issue with going back to Islam. You know, these motherfuckers put that shit before being black. So, yeah, this whole idea of being a feminist is like you're putting your gender before your race. You feel me? And then also, it don't work in real, especially if you were the real man, like a manly man. Like, there are some men who probably could have feminists as their wives and girlfriends and women, but you know, they really not like manly men. You get what I'm saying?
It never works out in my favor. Like, I usually find out after the fact, we might be dating or talking or friends with benefits or sexually active with each other, and then they come out eventually, like certain stuff. Like, just in behavior, and then I pick up on it, and it's crazy. Like, I was like, damn, I didn't know what I was getting myself into, like, being, like, when I was younger. But, you know who got me straight? Shahzad Ali. Yeah. They destroyed, like, her book, The Black Man, Black Woman. Man, that was like one of the most I haven't read it fully because I just haven't had time to sit down. But just watching her interviews, watching her lectures, got me more on code.
Yeah, some people call it feminism is intellectual lesbianism, basically. You feel what I'm saying? But it's deep, man. And you know, a lot of them hate men and all of that, and they deep down, and you'll be in a relationship and the shit's not gonna work out. Because deep down inside, they don't respect your manhood. You feel what I'm saying? But, yeah, man, get you a feminine woman, not a feminist. You feel what I'm saying? Get you a woman that's very feminine and cooperative and all of that. But I'm going to say this. You know, that feminism thing might be on its way out the door, man. It's starting to get a lot of reality checks. You know, feminism actually is what led to the LGBTQ lesbian, gay movement. You feel what I'm saying? And that movement with the transgenders is starting to implode because now you got the lesbians at war with the transgenders because lesbians are lesbians. They don't like men. You hear me? They like women. They do not like men. Transgenders believe that a man becomes a woman the moment he says, I'm a woman. You get what I'm saying? And then now that they want to force themselves into these spaces with women because they say I'm a woman, it's upsetting the lesbians because now you have a transgender man. Oh, is that your side? Because now lesbian women and transgender men saying, well, you should be willing to date me. You know how these transgenders are saying, oh, you're anti-tranny because you're not willing to date a tranny? They're saying that to the lesbians too. And lesbians are like, no, but I'm a woman. I only like women. I don't want a man who just decided to become a woman. I want a woman. You feel what I'm saying? So they're at war with each other right now. It's kind of, they're trying to keep it quiet because they're tearing each other apart because that's a fundamental disagreement that they have. You feel me? That the trannies believe a man becomes a woman when he gets a surgery and all that shit, or decides to become a woman. Whereas a traditional feminist, which they're calling radical feminist now, believes that a woman is a woman, period, and a man can never be a woman, and they don't want nothing to do with you. You get what I'm saying? So that feminism thing, man, is starting to get crushed by the monster that it created. Also, with this whole coronavirus thing, man, if you notice, man, when shit hit the fan, bro, and stores was no toilet paper, there was no milk, there was no all kinds of stuff was off the shelves, no bread on the shelves. If you remember, it was looking kind of hectic, you feel me? And people was in the store fighting over Lysol and hand wipes and gloves and toilet paper and face masks. They was fighting over that stuff in 2020. You know, a lot of women started to realize the value of having a man. You feel me? A lot of women who were saying, I don't need a man for nothing, having to go out there and elbow other people to get to some toilet paper, started to realize, like, damn, you know, there's women at home that get to stay at home because they get to send their men out to do that. You feel what I'm saying? Whereas now you got to go out there and fend for yourself. Mm-hmm. You feel me? And so this, the way that this direction that this world is going, it, you know, it's starting to allow women to truly appreciate the value of having a man around. You get what I'm saying? So, you know, I don't know, man. This feminism thing might be catching hell right now.
Yes, indeed, indeed. Any closing remarks?
You know, I want to say this. I want to say that Black men and Black women need to figure out ways to make themselves valuable to African people. You know, and then that's in whichever way that you see your strengths, you know. And so, like, if you're one of those intellectual persons, then you need to be learning how to code computers. You need to be learning how to create code and or maybe like architecture and all of those type of things. You feel me? And if you're if you just a warrior, then you need to sharpen your warrior skills. You feel what I'm saying? But I think that Black men and women need to be focused on bettering themselves to become valuable assets for African people, you know. And that's something that I want to close with, because I think that a lot of times people are wondering, you know, should I join an organization? What should I do? You know, how can I, you know, join the fight? And I think one of the most important things to do is to become one of the strongest links in the chain, as opposed to being a weak link in the chain. So if you're not valuable and useful to other people, and if you're not valuable and useful to African people, then you're like one of the weak links in the chain. So that's just my advice, and something that I want to leave people with, is that they should be focusing on bettering themselves in whichever ways they can, in terms of making themselves valuable to their people, to their family, and to their communities, so that if we do come together as a chain, that you're a strong link, just like I'm a strong link, you know?
Right, right, indeed. How can people get in contact with you?
You one of the last people that's going to be able, you know, like, I'm stepping back. You feel what I'm saying? In terms of being a public persona, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just going to focus on doing the work, you know, and putting in the work. And if people that are like, people need to be building with other Africans that are nearby in their proximity. That's what I think people should do, as opposed to, you know, because, like, you know, if you want to see me, then, you know, there'll be some videos online that might remain online. You feel me? But ultimately, the things that we said here, if you just follow the ancestors and stay on code, you feel me? Then, you know, you'll be straight.
Yeah, most definitely, man. Well, I want to thank you. I appreciate you, my brother, for giving me the opportunity to be your last interview. So thank you, man. I genuinely appreciate what you brought forth.
Thank you. I appreciate you for providing your platform. You know what I mean? And I hope that people was able to gain something and can go and move forward, you know, towards African freedom and liberation.